We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Well, we're coming down the final stretch of Michigan's football schedule here in 2021. As we continue to preview the opponents that Michigan will face today, it is the Nittany Lions. It's a trip to Happy Valley. My guest, Steve Jones, who is the voice of the Nittany Lions, not just on the football field, but also the hard court, joins us today on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Suddenly that game in November, which you and I think on November 13th is going to be a big game anyway. Look, it's Penn State, Michigan. It's showing up is going to be a big game.
Yes.
But, you know, in terms of the national perception, what if that's the kind of game that, you know what, the winner of this game is in the thick of the 12-team playoff.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends, and we're going to get to Steve Jones and the preview of the Penn State Nittany Lions and that matchup mid-November in just a few minutes. But before I get there, I want to remind you that the Defend the Block podcast with Brian Bush came out yesterday. His guest this week, grad transfer Devontae Jones, coming over from Coastal Carolina, and strength and conditioning coach John Sanderson. Great listen. Make sure you go download it. If you've missed anything in regards to the Defend the Block podcast, you can even go back a little bit further. Conquering Heroes, we're on a summer hiatus for that one. And anything you might have missed in the previews of leading up to this college football season on In the Trenches, go to MGO Blue Podcast with John Jansen. You can find all of it. It is stored in one location. Easy for you to find anything you need. But Mr. Bush, how are you this week?
I'm outstanding. I think Devontae Jones is going to be pretty good. It was one of those awkward things where everyone in the world knew that he had committed. He had tweeted about it. Michigan men's basketball Twitter can like things, can retweet, can whatever, but they can't say yes. Devontae's in until you get all the T's crossed, the I's dotted, both basketball-wise and school-wise. Good kid, hard worker. It's tough not to make the Mike Smith comparison. Coming up from a mid-major, had to score a lot, but he has passing ability. I like his chances to be pretty darn good.
Well, the transfer portal in college athletics right now is it's an absolutely wild situation. But when you look at the way that Juwan Howard has been able to mine that portal and find guys with good experience, with leadership capabilities, and put them on his team and find a way to get it all to work. And especially this year, with such a talented freshman class coming in, a lot of inexperience, to be able to go again into that transfer portal and get a guy that has that ability to score, has the ability to run an offense, and just knows what to expect when he takes the court at this level, I think it's a huge plus.
Yeah, and Juwan and the coaching staff have really credited Jerron Simmons, who's the video analyst, for showing these players and kind of adapting to the new norm of, hey, we can't bring you on campus, but let's go through a Zoom call and let's break down your fit with real film. It's not just talk or anything like that. That's really impressive. And the other aspect, too, flip the transfer portal around. No one's transferring out. The only departures are graduations or they're going to go to the NBA. In a year where we were in four digits of basketball players in D1 who were in the transfer portal, and no one left from Michigan. And they're bringing in talent. They're bringing in the number one recruiting class. That shows you the culture's in place.
So let me ask you a quick question. We've had the strength and conditioning coach, Ben Herbert, from football on here a number of times. You're obviously now getting a chance to talk to John Sanderson, who's the strength and conditioning coach over with basketball. What are some of the similarities that you've heard between the two and maybe some differences?
I think the big difference that he talked about to start there is, you know, in football and a lot of these sports, you'll have guys come in and I mean, high school juniors, high school seniors, they look like if they're standing on the sidelines of the Big House, that body type wise, they're comparable. They wouldn't stick out like a sore thumb. John talked about the fact that for some basketball guys, especially guards, they're playing. There's not a whole lot of muscle tone and muscle girth, if you will. And that's his job, to really help guys add muscle. Because, you know, if you're a basketball player, you don't necessarily need to be, you know, the most muscular, the strongest. If you can go out there and shoot and defend and run around, you're okay.
Well, yeah, so, but you want to still look good in your jersey.
Correct. No doubt. Of course.
You're wearing a tank top.
Of course.
Show off Smith and Wesson.
Correct. But as you know, it's a lot easier to go practice the fundamentals of basketball than it is football.
Yes.
Because you need 11 versus 11. There's a difference between practicing with pads and without pads. Basketball, you can go out there and shoot. You can shoot outside, inside, wherever, like much easier. So that was the big difference. I mean, the similarity is you have to cultivate a plan for each individual player. And now there's so much data that can come in. There's so much extra information that these guys are using. I mean, you know, you can monitor heart rate. You can monitor a lot of different things, speed, torque, stuff along those lines. They've got a little meter in the back of the top of their jersey that you see Sandman going in there and putting them in there at 6:30 for a 7 o'clock tip. So, I mean, the data and the individualized nature of this, and that's for, you know, 17 guys. Ben Herbert's got to worry about hundreds,
it seems
like.
Yeah, he does. And obviously, with the 20-game Big Ten schedule in basketball that we've become accustomed to, durability. Is a large issue. It's not, as you mentioned, and I jokingly say, they're going out there in their tank tops in their uniform and they get a chance to show off all of what they've worked on. But more importantly, it's being durable in a very physical Big Ten with 20 matchups, as well as, you know, the schedule that Michigan is going to have in the non-conference. I think that's got to be one of the biggest things for basketball players.
No doubt. And, I mean, now you're seeing – I mean, if you – in a normal basketball season, if you're playing into April, you're playing almost 40 games. Now, that's not the NBA, and there's a big step there. So it's not quite the same as in college. You see these teams playing 14, maybe 15 games. But, yeah, I mean, the Big Ten is rough and tumble. You gotta have some oomph in you, and I think that's where Sandman and that crew really do a good job. And I mean, he talked about it. He's chomping at the bit because he's got the best recruiting class in the country coming in, and he's kind of the first guy, just like Coach Herbert is here for football. When you come in, yeah, you're working with your position groups, but that strength and conditioning coach, he gets his hands on you first.
Yep, it's about getting the hands on, getting on campus, and being able to do these things. So, I tell you what, let's go hands on here in the trenches and go 7 from 77.
Yeah, number one, John, we have a date for the start of fall camp, August 6th. Considering where we were this time last year, it just feels good to know. Okay, August 6th is coming. Then it's September 4th, and we feel pretty good about those actually following through.
Yeah, we do. And at this time of the year, it feels, even if we're still having conversations about the pandemic and we haven't, you know, gotten to the end of anything, maybe we're in the waning moments of it, but it's still going on. I don't know that there's anything that will delay the start of training camp, delay the start of the football season, and just to have that sense of normalcy as a fan now, that's very comforting. And as a player, to have a schedule, these kids throughout the course of a year, their schedule is so regimented. This is what you're doing at this time in terms of, hey, it's middle of July. This is what we're supposed to be doing to get ready for our camp, which is going to start August 6th. That's a hard date. September 4 is a hard date. The Big Ten championship game and obviously the schedule throughout, those are all hard dates. So it gives you something to work towards, plan to, and not just this, hey, we don't know when camp's going to start. We don't know if we're going to have a season. Hey, but keep working hard. That's really, really hard to do. Having those hard dates makes a big difference for these kids.
Yeah, you think back to around this time last year where the Big Ten's announcement to initially postpone or cancel the season hadn't come out yet, but there were thoughts that could happen. And we were trying to talk ourselves
into
August
11, I believe it was.
Something like that. But my point is, we were trying to talk ourselves into, hey, maybe spring football. That wouldn't have worked.
No. And thankfully, we didn't have to find out if it did or not. And thankfully, right now, we do have that hard date of August the 6th. We can get things going. And, you know, when camp does start, it's going to be an ease into it, right? There's obviously a health and safety protocol in place for, you know, you can have so many practices. You can have then ease into helmets, ease into shoulder pads, ease into full contact. But I think these kids, and having talked to a few of them and seen them around the football office, they could not be more excited.
No doubt about that. Number two, not officially announced by the program as of this recording, but according to several reports, the first being the Baltimore Sun, Michigan will have a new member of its staff getting set for fall camp and beyond. Biff Poggi, an associate head coach, that was his title when he was here for a little bit more than a year back in 2016. Most recently, head coach at the powerhouse that is St. Francis Academy in that Baltimore area. That's where Blake Corum came from. There have been a few other Michigan recruits over the years. Your thoughts on that role and what he can bring in again?
Well, there's a few thoughts. One, Biff is a guy that you just like to be around. I think he's going to bring a great attitude, a great just individual to be around here at the football offices. And he's a good football mind as well. And the more good football minds that you can get on both sides of the ball, it just adds to what you are going to be able to put together for game plans and preparation and more eyeballs to see what's working, what's not working, what do we need to work on. He's got a great eye for all of that. Plus, the fact that he was at a very prestigious school, developed a great football program, so his ability to relate to high school players. Because let's face it, the better players that you have walk through the door, the better product that you're going to have on Saturdays in the big house. And that is, we've seen it with an overhaul of the staff. It's been much younger. You have great recruiters in Mike Hart and Ron Bellamy. We know what his history, not only here, has been for both those guys, but also Ron Bellamy coming from the high school ranks, winning a state championship here in the state of Michigan. Now all of a sudden you've got another guy who's had great success at the high school level and has that ability to relate to the high school player, and it's going to help in recruiting.
It shows you how far along high school football has gotten to where there are real candidates now in high school football to make that jump. Number three, just overview of that. I mean, we've seen more and more movement, players and coaches alluding to the transfer portal earlier. It seems like the portal, it seems like the coaching carousel are both working every single day of the year. So what challenges does this provide, and do you see this becoming even more frequent and more common?
I think we're going to see a lot of it because players do now have that ability to be, you know, immediately eligible when they transfer. They don't have to sit out that one season. So you're going to have guys that transfer for a lot of different reasons, and to try and go through those reasons would be futile at this point, because each kid is going to make a decision that they feel is right for them. They're going to have their own reasons. Sometimes it's just getting closer to home, getting closer to mom and dad, didn't know what it was going to be like being so far apart from them. Others, it's going to be playing opportunities. Others, maybe there's a coaching change. Maybe there's a philosophy change. There's, you know, they look at the depth chart and they say, you know what, my clock is ticking. And I have a very finite amount of time, and I'm not moving up the depth chart as quickly. I look at the depth chart over here and think that I can go over there. Those are just a few of the reasons why we're going to continue to see player movement at the college level. Now you also look and you say, well, there are so many players at the in the transfer portal. There's not always a landing spot for those players because you do have freshmen that are coming in, taking up some scholarships. You have, you know, some teams that aren't going to mind the portal or as much as others. We talked when I talked to Jason Strayhorn, I think the number was 47 new faces that they have. Now, that's not all from the transfer portal. That's incoming freshmen as well. But that is a huge number of influx of new bodies in a program. So, you know, it's kind of a give and take. The grass isn't always greener. Sometimes it is. Sometimes the situation's better. But I would caution all of these student-athletes as they enter the portal, know that it's not always what you think it's going to be. You're not always going to be that top recruit. You think it's going to be like it was coming out of high school where, hey, you're a 4-, 5-star guy, even a 3-star guy, and you've got all of these different offers. You're getting all of these different phone calls. It's not always the same when you're in the portal. And there was I forget the name of the company that helps different programs mine the transfer portal. There is a company that will go and they'll say, okay, if you need a wide receiver and you want one that has, you know, a more deep threat, or, you know, they'll narrow down those statistics and say, okay, average yards per catch, here are these guys, take a look at them. There are certain universities and colleges that aren't going to take incoming freshmen. They're only going to recruit out of the transfer portal. So I think it shows you there is a lot of talent in the transfer portal. And if you can find a way to take a look at some of that and say, hey, this one or two guy can help my program, or if you're a new coach like a Mel Tucker and you're doing an overhaul of the program, you can really change things a lot quicker than you could have 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a game changer, and we're seeing that more and more as time goes on. Number four, let's transition into our preview for the show, and that's Penn State, like Michigan, coming off an unprecedented, a really frustrating 2020 season. We'll hear from Steve Jones to get his input and his analysis, but Penn State's they're a secondary rival. We always monitor what's happening at Penn State. What do you think their 2021 looks like?
I think they're going to have a bounce back year. It's a very prideful school, prideful program, great history there. Those kids understand exactly what is expected of them, and they're going to go into this football season. I think it's awesome. Awesome, the matchup to start the season with against Wisconsin. I mean, that is a premier matchup in the Big Ten at any point of the season. But to be able to start the season off with it, and we talked about Wisconsin earlier with Graham Mertz and the defense with Jim Leonard and all that they have going for them now with Penn State, Sean Clifford in his third year as a starter. I'm going to be interested to watch this offense and how Sean Clifford operates in this offense. I thought Kirk Ciarocca, their offensive coordinator last year, was going to be a really good fit for him. We saw what he was able to do with Tanner Morgan at Minnesota. I thought that their skill set was very similar. I thought the quick passes, the easy decision-making was going to benefit him. Now he's no longer there. They've got their third coordinator in 3 years. This will be Sean Clifford's third coordinator. How does he pick up the offense? Is the experience that he's gained over the last couple of years as the starter, where will that fit in with some new terminology, some new schemes? This offensive line, I think, is going to be one of the better ones that Penn State has had over the last couple of years. So it's going to be very interesting to see this team and how they come out against Wisconsin early on.
Number five, the Michigan-Penn State game is set for November 13th. Now, take out the uniqueness of 2020. Before that, there was not a night game in the final 3 weeks of the Big Ten slate in 2018 or 2019. There was only one in 2017, and that was Purdue-Northwestern. No disrespect, but that wasn't the marquee matchup of the week that week in the Big Ten. So I'm saying this to say, okay, if this trend continues, most likely that game in Happy Valley will not be a night game. That has to help because I experienced the whiteout in 2019. I have not been there for a noon or a 3:30 or 4 o'clock game, but there seems to be a difference in a whiteout game versus a regular game at Penn State?
There certainly is. The atmosphere around a whiteout game. Now, I'm not going to be foolish enough to discount the atmosphere a noon game or a 3:30 game. But when you have a whiteout at Penn State, it's different. It just is. And if you've not experienced it, you need to. It's one of the great experiences in all of college football. But it will change a little bit of the atmosphere. There's still going to be as much pressure on both teams. There's still going to be just as many eyeballs nationally for both teams because of what has happened to both teams in 2020. We would like to take the eraser and say that 2020 never happened. You can't do that. 2-4 for Michigan, 4-5 for Penn State. And you just, this is going to be a state of the program type of game. Where is Penn State? Where is Michigan? We'll know a lot by that point because there's a large part of the season that's going to be played up till then, but it's going to be a great moment in college football. And I'm a little bit disappointed that we won't have, or at least we're anticipating not having that whiteout game because it is so unique and it is so special. But having a night game in Pennsylvania in November, weather can play a huge factor. And I would like to remove some of those factors so that we can find out exactly what these teams are and who they are.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. There's no doubt about that. Number six, you'll go into this with Steve Jones at the end of the conversation about the college football playoff, and there's plenty of potential ramifications of mm-hmm. the proposed expansion to 12. One of them we've discussed is potentially the elimination of divisions if you're going to have, 12 bids, 6 automatics for the conferences, it's advantageous to avoid a 7-5, kind of a fluky division champion. So the model that a lot of people propose in that is protected rivalries. And the common number thrown out there for a 9-game schedule is 3. Because then you would be able to play everybody else 2 times in a 4-year stretch. So if you play college for 4 years, you get to go everywhere in the league. If for Michigan, of course, the 2 protected rivalries to start, no-brainers are Ohio State and Michigan State. Is Penn State your third? How would you characterize that? Because there are several potential candidates. If you were the commissioner, if you were the commissioner of sports, well, who would be your third protected rivalry?
See, now you're putting me in a position to go old guy because I'm not traditionally the get off. Well, I am the get off my lawn kind of guy.
Not terrible, but occasionally.
Yeah, occasionally. And yes, the Penn State is. It's a great rivalry. It's a great game. I would prefer that the protected matchup be Wisconsin.
Okay.
Because it does a couple of things. One, it brings in matchups on the other side of what is now the divisions of the Big Ten. You're going to have a number of years where Penn State is going to be on the schedule. Iowa's going to be on the schedule. And I do like this because you can have some more of those matchups instead of having to wait 7 years or 4 years, whatever it is, to play a team. And as a matter of fact, I would even go with a team like Minnesota. Not a great matchup, but it is a great trophy game. And there's a lot of history in that game. The Little Brown Jug should be one that you get a chance to play on a regular basis to determine where that trophy lives. And that it's not in one place, unless you earn it year in, year out, that it's not in one place just sitting in somebody's trophy cabinet and, say, hey, 3 years down the road, we're going to play for this trophy. It loses a little bit of luster at that point. But I think Wisconsin has, and Paul Christ has that program humming along. They are going to continue to be a premier program in the Big Ten. And I just like that matchup between Michigan and Wisconsin. Plus, I like going to Madison a lot more than I like going to Happy Valley. Happy Valley is really hard to get to.
Now we're getting to the crux
of the issue. And it's even worse to get out of. I was telling this story the other day, too. Like, when you go to Madison, like, you can stay in a modern hotel. When you go to Happy Valley, I have to duck to get into the bathroom. And when I take a shower, the shower head hits me literally almost in the belly button. Now,
there's a visual.
There's a great visual for all of our listeners. Please, when you're done trying to erase that from your memory banks, I just like that matchup between Michigan and Wisconsin. Two class programs continuing to play on a year-in, year-out basis.
So we're going to have Steve Jones here momentarily again. I was there in 2019 filling in for Doug. And to go to show you, I mean, it's impossible to get out of there after a game. Oh. We're there for an hour doing post-game stuff.
And traffic hasn't moved at all.
Not at all. And what's great is Tony and I, who drove back together, we see Steve Jones just hanging out at a tailgate eating a hot dog because he knows he's not getting home.
Right.
There's no rush.
Right. And all he's got to do, I don't know where Steve lives, but he's got to go, what, 45 minutes, hour max?
Yeah.
Maybe it's even closer than that. Whereas, like, just to, and I was there with my wife, it took us an hour and a half just to get out of the parking lot. That has nothing to do with the traffic that you encounter once you're on the road. And it just is an absolute nightmare to get out of.
And again, that's after, I mean, we're not leaving right when things end.
We do the post-game show. We do the post-game. And Jim Branster and I do the Inside Michigan football hit. So we're leaving literally an hour and a half after the final whistle. And that is the earliest. Yep. Sometimes it's 2 hours after the game, and still there is absolutely zero movement.
It's one of a kind. There's no doubt. Number seven. Okay, I am so excited to hear this answer. When I sent you our rundown for today.
You're a jerk.
Yep. So, John, of course, Penn State, his head coach is your good pal, James Franklin. So, I have a for instance for you. If you had three and only three offers, and they came from James Franklin, PJ Fleck, and Scott Frost, who would you choose? That is it. Now, I guess I can give a fourth option of you don't play football, but those are it. Those are your three options or no more football for 18-year-old John Jansen.
First of all, I really thought you had a little bit more respect for me to think that those
were
almost
at 200 episodes
offers. And normally when you ask a question like this where there is no good option, the one asking the question will actually say death, not an option, because I do believe that that might be a good fourth option here. Fifth option of not playing or possibly death.
So I didn't go there, but I did notice the similarities that all three last names happen to start with the letter F, which yes. I feel like there's another F word that's going through your mind when you think about this question.
Exactly. Yes. We could rename all of those universities.
That seems aggressive.
So James Franklin, the ultimate cheerleader. Well, I say the ultimate cheerleader, and then you have PJ Fleck, who may outdo him. And then Scott Frost. Oh, Brian. James Franklin is a hard no. PJ Fleck would be very, very difficult for me to deal with on a day in, day out basis. Scott Frost, while you know my disdain for the situation that he and I have been in for the past 24 years, and the debate that goes back and forth, I had a chance to sit down with Scott Frost 2 years ago at the Big Ten meetings. And from a former football player sitting down with a former football player, I can appreciate his intensity for the game of football, his love of the game of football, his passion for his university, as well as his respect for the passion that I have for my university. Given the choice of those three, yes, I still want to play the game of football, and no, I do not want to choose death. I would choose Scott Frost out of those three because I believe he's a football guy coaching a football team at a football university.
I'm so proud of you. I am so proud of you.
I could put a few things aside, can't I?
It was tough. It took a bit to get there, but you did. My prediction was Fleck, because my theory on that was,
You know me?
No.
Hi, I'm John Jansen. Nice to meet you.
Yes. Oh, I'm aware, but it's not like the other two options are great. I would have thought maybe, you know what? I'll try that baseball thing. You were pretty good at that. Yeah. That might have been your option.
At least you didn't put Ryan Day in there. I do have respect from him, but that would be a completely different level.
Correct. Yeah. I'm not saying that. I wasn't saying that they're at Penn State Minnesota, Nebraska. I'm just saying the three people, and that's. I feel like those are. If you just take out the schools, and those are the three people that you. They're.
This has become very uncomfortable.
They're very low. Yeah, I know. Yes. You want to just get to the bacon fact?
Yeah, let's go. Okay. Bacon.
I have bad news.
By the way, bacon does make everything better. So.
Correct. Yeah. Transition.
Yes, here we go.
I do have bad news though.
Oh.
There is a Pennsylvania Bacon Fest, and it's the weekend before Michigan plays at Penn State, November 6th and 7th. Missing it by one. Week.
That's okay, because you know what? Now that I'm looking on the bright side of all of this and the college football season, what that means is, first of all, bacon will last a long time. I get all the leftovers. And so, hey, open up your fridges, open up those Tupperware, open up everything that you've stored, all of the bacon that you could not take or get rid of the weekend before. I am here to tell you, I will come and assist in the disposal of all of the leftover bacon.
That would make the traffic wait a heck of a lot better if you just had a bunch of leftover bacon there.
I guess I'll have to take my truck.
I'm proud of you, John. Let's get in the interview, but I'm very proud of you because before we went on, I really thought I was going to have to come up with a different number seven of like, you know, I don't know, tell me about the 97 Penn State game, which would have been a lot more fun.
It would have been, but hey, we handle all the tough questions.
Great
here.
Job.
Never shy away from anything. But and a guy who doesn't shy away from anything and another program coming off a tough year, two programs, Michigan, Penn State, hoping to rebound after a lackluster 2020. Steve Jones is the voice of the Nittany Lions. He does the play-by-play for football and basketball. And this was one that I was looking forward to because I've known Steve for over a decade. He does a great job. And I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation. So please enjoy it. Steve Jones, Penn State Nittany Lions.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Well, I am joined by a guy that I love to see every single football season. I get a chance to talk to him in the preseason in some previous jobs and now obviously at the University of Michigan for In the Trenches. Steve Jones, who calls the game for the Penn State Nittany Lions. I can't say I always enjoy seeing your team, but I do enjoy seeing Steve Jones, obviously the host of the Steve Jones Show. You could catch him from 3 to 5. You can also listen to it on his website, stevejones.com, stevejonesshow.com. But Steve, thanks for joining us. And how fired up are you for what is anticipated to be a regular college football season?
When my good friend John Jansen calls me and says, hey, let's talk football, I really start to get excited for the season, and especially more of a return to normalcy, 100% capacity in the Big House, 100% capacity in Beaver Stadium. And I think you and I are anticipating big returns for the respective programs. So maybe more excited about this season than any other in my career.
It's a very anticipated season for all the things you mentioned, just being able to get back in person and see games, call games, but hopefully both of our programs return to what the anticipation and expectations are for them. I know that you guys started off last year 0-5, and it was a heartbreaker in Bloomington, but you ended up with 4 wins and you got back on the winning track against us. How big of a deal was it last year, or how big of a hit was it to James Franklin and the team to have a heartbreaking loss to start off the season against Indiana?
Well, when you have big expectations, and Penn State did have big expectations. I mean, last year, some people had Penn State as high as seventh. And you get out of the gate and you lose that game, and then Ohio State's your next game. You know, now you just feel like, okay, you're working from behind. And not only that, early on, you feel like you're working from way behind. And you know, with all the COVID and the testing and everything like that, to be honest with you, you felt like everybody's just trying to survive. And the best way to survive is to go out and win. Well, it becomes tougher when you're not winning. And that becomes a big problem. So the fact that they were able to bounce back, win the last four, I think it tells you everything, though, about the kind of toll it took on the season because they played nine straight weeks. And so Penn State was one of the few teams that played all the way through, never missed. Mm-hmm. And when they had a chance to go to a bowl game, they said no. Because at that point, it was going to be right around Christmas weekend. They had enough. So, yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly.
It was an exhausting football season for all parties involved. And obviously, we're not as involved as the players, the coaches, and the administrative staff. But it just was a long year for everybody. And this year, you guys started off with Indiana last year because it was all Big Ten schedule, but this year you start on the road at Wisconsin. That's a tough draw. How excited is this team, James Franklin, your fan base, to be able to start off the season with such a great matchup?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think you get out of the gate with something that is just right there for you to play a road game against a really good team. Where if you can win that game, now you feel like, okay, everybody, quote, we're back on track. And then the week after that, then they play Ball State at home. They got Auburn. So right out of the gate, Penn State, two of its first three games, will, I think, tell us a lot about where Penn State's going. I think by September 18th, I think we're going to have a pretty good idea of what kind of football team Penn State's going to have. And you're right, to have a big game like that out of the gate for both teams. And this is what the Big Ten is trying to promote. They're trying to promote conference action and spread the schedule out the way the SEC does what I call its mirage. They only play eight conference games, but they dot them all over the place where you feel like the SEC has a big game every week. And the Big Ten is trying to do the same thing. And I think Penn State, Wisconsin fits that bill.
What for this team? And, you know, there's a lot that I want to get into on both sides of the ball, as well as for James Franklin. But for this team, when you look at the schedule, before we get to the Michigan game, November 13, you mentioned it, you're at Wisconsin, and then you've got a home game against Auburn. And then you've got Indiana, which is a program on the rise. You're on the road against Iowa. You've got Ohio State and Maryland both on the road. And I don't want to skip over Illinois because Brett Bielema, I think he's obviously had a lot of success on that side of the Big Ten, but that's a tough schedule when you look at it, especially for, as we both know, our programs are trying to rebound and get back to prominence. I know it's a lot of games to highlight, but it's also a tough schedule with some of those games on the road, like Ohio State and Maryland.
And what's going to help, John, is that this is a veteran team in a lot of ways. I think that's what helps. And you and I both know that usually with veteran teams, it's not just how many starters you have back. Veteran teams usually are deeper with more experienced players. And you know, even though Penn State will, you know, you'll see a stat that Penn State has 54 freshmen on their roster. Well, you know, some of them are Kevon Lee and Keziah Holmes. They played as true freshmen last year. They're still technically freshmen this year. But they've got a lot of players on this team. And that really helps so that if you run into an injury here or there, you'll be able to overcome it with more of a veteran team than you do with a younger team. And I think that's going to help Penn State navigate this schedule because they do have some depth.
It's hard to have a veteran team anymore simply because players, they can transfer. They're immediately eligible now. Throw on top of that everything that's going on with NIL, and that's a completely different topic, would take probably a number of podcasts for us to talk about. But to have a veteran team at this point of college football, and just in terms of where we are today, that has to be going into a football season, one of the greatest assets anybody could have.
Oh, there's no question. They were able to do well with the transfer portal. Number one, nobody came back for a sixth year. All right, so that helps in terms of your numbers. Mm-hmm. Number two, they did well with the transfer portal. They needed a defensive end. They got Arnold Ebiketie from Temple. Really good player, John. I mean, good quickness off the edge. Derek Tangelo from Duke, who not only will help them at defensive tackle, but he also helps the team GPA. Right? So, they were able to get John Lovett out of Baylor. I mean, they were able to do well with Johnny Dixon, a corner out of South Carolina. Those guys are going to help. So Penn State did well, and see what if you use the transfer portal right, and this is from my basketball experience, one of the keys in basketball for Penn State, right? You got a lot of one and dones all over the place in college basketball. A program like Penn State in basketball, John, to be successful needs to be older. Mm-hmm. So in football, if you can keep yourself older at certain positions, Penn State was able to do that with Tangelo, with Ebiketie, with Dixon. They're able to keep themselves older at defensive tackle, at defensive end, at corner, love it at running back. That really does help. And that if you use the transfer portal right, you can keep yourself older in certain spots.
Well, I'll just go ahead and start on defense then, because you brought up some of those guys that I had questions about in regards to Ebiketie coming over, obviously from Temple. But I think, at least up front, the anchor to me seems like P.J. Mustipher. He's been there a while. He's a good player. And I think by the end of the season, you're going to be talking about two guys, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but P.J. Mustipher and Hakeem Beamon. I think both of those guys are going to be rock solid for the Nittany Lions.
Beamon's a guy that Jack Ham and I, in our broadcast, highlighted several times down the stretch as one of those young guys that starts to come on. Mustipher is a known entity. I think he has a chance to have a really good season. I'll give you one other guy up front that I think is going to be really important to their success, and that's Adisa Isaac. Isaac really did not have a terrific sophomore season, but he went out and had a really good spring, and I think he is now on the cusp of becoming a really good defensive end, especially if you can balance off Ebiketie on the other side. So I'll throw his name in there as well as a guy to watch for Penn State up front.
And as we all know, it's for the longest time been known as linebacker. What do you guys have at that linebacker position coming back this year?
Brandon Smith's a big-time player at linebacker. And they've taken him from the field linebacker way outside, and now they've moved him more to an inside linebacking spot. So by doing that, he is now around the action. And you and I both know, John, that one of the adjustments you always have to make when you're outside to going inside is now it's a different traffic pattern. But Brandon was used to that in high school. And what really helped him make that move is that Curtis Jacobs, who's another five-star guy, really started to come on at the field linebacker outside. So they've got those two guys there. Jesse Lucchetta is the guy that can move around to a couple different spots, and Ellis Brooks. So they're actually going to be really good at linebacker, but Smith's going to be a key guy this year. He stays healthy, John. He'll be a triple-digit tackle guy.
And on the back end, you've got some veteran guys along with some youth on the edge. What's the strength of this secondary?
This may be, across the board, the deepest secondary Penn State's had in the 40 years I've been around here. Getting Tariq Castro-Fields to come back for a fifth year was really important. That really solidified that spot for them. Then they got Johnny Dixon. All right. They were able to get, Jaquan Brisker. Brisker surprised me, John. I thought Brisker would be the guy that, I'll go to the draft. Not going to be a first or second round pick. But he decided to come back. Mm-hmm. And when he came back, that made a big difference. Keaton Ellis is a guy that gives them versatility, who can play both corner and safety. I mentioned Dixon, who's going to be a big plus for them. They got Kalen King. Kalen King's a true freshman. I think he's going to play for them. I really do. So they've got some guys in that secondary, I think, that are really good and deep, and they can rotate them. And the fact that Ellis can play both spots helps because they were going to need a fourth safety to step up in there anyway, because you know how things work today. It's the same thing with what Michigan does. They play, how many guys in defense does Michigan play? 22, 23 guys in the game?
At least,
Penn State's playing 10 to 12 guys up front. they're playing at least eight, sometimes nine guys in the secondary. And they've got the kind of depth that helps them, especially in today's game where you may want to play some nickel, where you may want to play some dime, and they've got some guys that can play those spots.
And the college game of football has changed so much, especially in the Big Ten. You look back a decade or even 15 years, and it was still a ground-and-pound conference. Now, you mentioned the strength of the secondary and the fact that they've built up a very talented and deep secondary. You have to have that in the Big Ten because it has now become such a passing league. You still have to be able to run the ball, but the speed on the back end, like we're analysts right now, and the fact that we still have yet to see what either team is going to be like when they put the pads on in the fall. You had a chance to see Penn State in the spring. The strength of this defense, will it be defending the run? Will it be against the pass? What would you say the identity is going to be?
I think they're going to be really good against the pass because I think the strength of the defense, to me, John, is secondary. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they've got multiple bodies in the secondary, that really helps. This is not just four guys that can go out and play. Like a Jair Brown is another safety. He'll be the guy opposite Brisker, for example. But they've got, by my count, nine guys that can play in the secondary and the versatility where they can play nickels and dimes if they want. So I think that's the strength of the defense. You know, it's interesting because I think the guy that changed this league was Joe Tiller when he came in. I remember a reporter asked Joe early on, he says, well, do you think that your offense can hold up in November in the Big Ten? I mean, really? And he looked at him. He says, I ran this offense in Wyoming. He says, that's not a banana republic.
Right, exactly. Don't you you remember his one-liners were great.
Yeah.
He was such a good.
But that's the way the league is. Look, Michigan over the years has taken great advantage of the passing game with some of the outstanding quarterbacks they've had. It's just now it's like across the board, everybody is now running spread. Everybody's throwing out of it. You've got to have quarterbacks that can also run in today's game. And, I mean, that's the way the Big Ten is. That's why I think Big Ten football is so exciting today because I think it's so wide open.
It is. Not a surprise to say the strength of that defense is going to be the secondary. And it's not – and I know you're not – I'm not taking for granted the strength of what we had just talked about with P.J. Mustafer and some of those other guys up front and the great linebacking core you have. But if you don't have that secondary, boy, you're just playing, in today's college football, especially in the Big Ten, you're playing with fire. Let's go over to the offensive side because I mentioned that used to be ground and pound, and it's always amazing to me how certain programs develop depth, whether it's in recruiting and, you get five-star guys, four-star guys, and then you also get some of those three-star guys that come in and it's developing that talent. You also now have the transfer portal. But at running back, it seems like Penn State always goes three or four deep. Now, Devin Ford will be back. He's going to be healthy again. Talk to us a little bit about the depth that you guys have been able to accumulate at that running back position.
They got five guys, John, which goes right to your point. John Lovett transferred in from Baylor. You mentioned Devin Ford. Kevon Lee, who played really well against Michigan last year, he's back. And Lee is, I think, one of those. He's lost a little bit of weight, too. He's down about maybe 5-6 pounds from where he was last year. He looks a little quicker to me. Keziah Holmes. And then the guy that I think a lot of people are looking at saying, hey, this guy, getting him back is huge, Noah Kane. Mm-hmm. Noah Kane was the starting running back in last year's game against Indiana. In the opening series, he hurt his foot and he was out for the rest of the year. Kane's going to be really important because he's one of those guys that when you hit him, John, at 5, he gets you 7. When you hit him at 8, he gives you 10. He's not one of those guys, you've had to be frustrating. You didn't have many of these at Michigan, okay? But it's always frustrating. You'll throw a block guy, gets hit, goes down right away. It's like, how much did you love the running backs that you had that when they got hit, they kept going forward, right? I mean, and that makes everybody in the offense get energized. And Lee's like that, Kane's like that. And I think they've got that kind of depth. And not only that, for the most part, these guys are pretty good in the passing game, too.
Well, and obviously Wolverine fans won't forget anytime soon Keon Lee. I think he went for 134 against us last year. So, and to your point, when you start off the game in the first quarter and you're getting four, you know, hit at four and you're getting six in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter, when you're getting hit at eight and you're getting 10 or 11, it's so disheartening for the defense, but it's so energizing for everybody, not just the offense, but for the defense that's watching it on the sidelines. It's so energizing, and Penn State has been able to do that. Now, I know that you've got at the left tackle position, Rashid Walker made the decision to come back and be a part of this offense again. What did it mean to see him come back, as well as for the development of some of the younger guys on this offensive line?
No question, John. That was a big one. Walker is one of those that Jack Ham and I were looking at saying, okay, what's he going to decide? Imagine how Sean Clifford felt as a right-handed quarterback than his left tackle. He better decide to come back. And then more to him than anybody else. But he's got good feet. He's got long arms. I think he's got a future in the league, without question. And I think that having him back, he'll anchor that. But I think there'll be a couple other guys. Mike Miranda is going to, I think, make the move to center. And sometimes during a season, somebody will come on and you'll sit back and say, you know what, I've been waiting for that guy. All right. Penn State, a guy named Juice Scruggs. Juice Scruggs is a guy who was in a bad car accident a couple of years ago, John. It really set him back. I mean, his weight dropped into the upper 260s and so forth. Well, now he's all the way back. And in you talked about the four-game winning streak at the end of the season. He was able to play a lot during that streak, and he was pivotal to the point where, over and over again, you kept noticing he was making plays. You kept noticing he was making blocks. And I think he'll be one of those unsung, underrated guys that's going to be very important to what they do.
And then, obviously, as I'm talking to Steve Jones of the Steve Jones Show, also does play-by-play for men's basketball and football there at Penn State. Pat Freiermuth will be playing on Sundays. Who fills his shoes?
Well, obviously, you're talking about a guy that even in a limited amount of time ended up winning the award in the conference, top tight end. I mean, and he was a second-round pick. But Brenton Strange played a lot last year. Strange is a good-looking player. Theo Johnson, when Freiermuth got hurt, he was forced to play. You're like, okay, he can play. Then Tyler Warren is a converted quarterback who is now playing tight end. And with those three guys, they'll fill the bill. All three can catch it. Johnson and Strange in particular can block it, which is really good because, let's face it, in these offenses, you and I remember the days of the fullback. And I say this with all due respect to you, Ben Mason, I love you. Okay?
Yes.
But not many teams are using fullbacks anymore. But the fullback now is the H-back tight end part. And you've got to have guys that can block it. And Strange and Johnson can block it. I think Warren's coming along will get better. But those will be the three guys that will fill the bill. And tight ends are important in the offense that Mike Yurcich uses, and I think they're going to utilize them.
And just as a side note, too, we started this off, and you mentioned the depth and the veteran presence that this team has. What was the value last year? Obviously, you don't want to ever see guys get hurt, but you had certain guys go down. You had some guys opt out, and nobody lost that year of eligibility, but there was a depth of experience that was gained. How has that helped this program, and the guys that were able to step in and play?
Yeah. So John, let's go across the board with certain guys that were able to step in and play last year. Keaton Ellis played a lot because Tariq Castro Fields got hurt in the second game of the season. So there's a guy that played a lot last year because of that. Mm-hmm. Kevon Lee and Keziah Holmes both played a lot because suddenly Noah Cain went down. And Devin Ford got bumped up here and there. So suddenly, Kane's out. Lee moves up. Holmes moves up. Freiermuth got hurt. Strange and Johnson got invaluable experience that helps in this season, even though there may have been some growing pains last year. So that's where you get, if you have enough players in the program, suddenly guys can get valuable experience. And you can take a negative of an injury and eventually turn it into a positive.
Let's talk about the explosiveness of this offense. And anytime you say that, people talk about the wide receivers. And I know you've got Jahan Dotson. He's wide receiver one. You've got a depth of talent there. But include in that Sean Clifford and the fact that this is his third year and it's going to be his third offense. How has he been able to adjust to so many different offenses while still maintaining some production?
Well, that's good. It's bottom line. He's the key to the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the key to the whole thing. And you're right. Along the way, you know, I think what helps him, though, in this offense is they had spring practice.
Right.
So Mike Yurcich gets hired. They can go through a normal winter program. Great. Now, they had a normal winter program until COVID hit a year ago, so that wasn't an issue. But they had no spring. So now you go out with 15 practices of practical application. I mean, that's big. Mm-hmm. That's 15 practices of practical application. So in terms of this offense, Sean has been able to go through this offense and go through the teaching on the field of this offense, go through the teaching in a film room of this offense, based on what they were doing in practice. I think that makes a big difference. He's now out there running 7-on-7s like all the other quarterbacks across the country, working on this offense in the 7-on-7s as opposed to what they couldn't do last year. So that makes a big difference for him. He needs to look, he's the guy. He's going to have to come through in every situation, starting on the road at Wisconsin. The fact that he's a veteran, been around the block. He's won some big games in his career. He's won bowl games in his career. I think will bode well for him along the way. And I think, you know, he and Mike work well together. It's interesting. Yurcich will say, well, he's not there yet. Well, geez, they haven't played a game yet, John. I hope they're not there yet.
Right. Exactly. When you talk about Sean, and obviously nobody wants to see injuries. They happen in the game of football, and it's so important to have depth at that quarterback position. Where is Penn State in regards to quarterback depth?
Well, Taquan Roberson would be the backup right now, and Johnny is very limited reps in games, very limited. Obviously, I've been to practices. I've watched him practice. Now, have I watched a guy get better every single year? Yeah. I mean, there's no question. The guy I watched in spring practice, and I was at the last 11 Penn State had, the guy I watched in spring practice is a much better quarterback than I saw a year ago. Is a much better quarterback than I saw 2 years ago. I mean, not even close. But, John, I haven't seen him do it in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So when he gets into a game, my references are going to be to practice. And you and I both know in a game, for all the reps you go through in practice, once you get into game speed, there is a reason why it is different. And it's something that, you know, you and I will both be on a learning curve as to how well he can play in an actual game if he is put into that situation.
Yeah, it's pressure, it's speed, it's anticipation. There's so many things that change when it's a Saturday instead of a Tuesday afternoon. And I apologize because I kind of skipped right over it, but I mentioned Jahan Dotson, wide receiver one, but you've also got Parker Washington. I agree. I think explosive, and the more opportunities he's get, the more he's going to show. What is it that you're looking for from this wide receiving group?
Well, Dotson's the home run hitter. There's no getting around it. Washington has great footwork for a wideout, runs really good routes, great hands too. The key last year was trying to find the guy on the opposite side of them. And I think they've started to find that guy in Keandre Lambert-Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's a guy to watch. Daniel George is a veteran who's a good player, a solid player, hasn't really given you the game-breaking feeling yet. Keandre Lambert-Smith can be a game-breaker. We've got a guy from Canada that, you know, again, this is one of those that just takes time, but a guy named Malik Mega could be a guy that ends up being, not a star this particular year. I mean, Dotson's the guy. Washington's the guy. All right? No getting around it. But this guy, Mega, has a chance to get in there, and I think he'll have an ability to make a game-breaking play somewhere along the way as the season goes along. So they've done a good job of recruiting there, getting depth there. And I think that's made a big difference for them because you just can't have it so centered on Dotson even though everybody tried to take him away last year, right? That's where Washington came into play. But the fact that they've got those two, that's a good start. Now you start filling in with the other spots. I think they're going to probably play as many as 7 wideouts during the course of a game. But 7 guys that can contribute, and I think that really helps.
And it helps when they have names that, as a play-by-play guy, you can play off of. And I'm sure Mega, when he does have that big play, you're going to be ready to nail it.
Oh, yeah, sure. that's what you're hoping for. That's why when Georgie Bishanishvili decided to turn pro and leave Illinois, he did every broadcaster in America the favor.
yes. Whenever I talked about him, I shortened it. It was just Georgie B. I knew I was going to mess it up.
That's what, John, this is what we did all the time. Dick Girardi, who does basketball, we just called him Georgie after a while. Every once in a while, I'd say Bishanishvili attempting to show off.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was going too. And every time you say a name like that, it's just you're just showing off at that point. Before I let you go, and as I talk to Steve Jones, who you're going to hear on the broadcast if you're listening on the Penn State side of things, has joined us. Michigan will travel to State College and take on Penn State November 13. And it's going to be such a big, November for the Big Ten, for both Michigan and Penn State. James Franklin, where is he at with the continued rise of this program? And I think last year, at least I think both of us are hoping that last year was a one-off. Where is this program under James Franklin's guidance?
Well, you look at if they had put the 12-team playoff in, say it had already been in play, Penn mm-hmm. State would have been in the 12-team playoff in 16, 17, 18, and 19. Mm-hmm. So that tells you about where they are in the national scope. And geez, Michigan would have been in how many times, John? I mean, they would have been in 3 times.
Yeah. A couple of times at least. Span?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that makes a big difference. So that lets you know the perception of where you are in all of this. You're right about the schedule, but he's got the program in a really terrific spot and he's worked hard to get there. And now we're all going to find out, was last year a one-off? Right, which I think it was.
Yeah,
I absolutely think it was. I feel the same way about Michigan. I feel like last year was a one-off. I mean, just the way it's unless you're around it, and you and I at least are around it, mm-hmm. we at least can give people some perspective about it. Just wasn't normal for anybody across the board. I mean, even Alabama. I know it's hard to believe. even they had to go through twists and turns during the course of the season. So, and I think the Big Ten. It's nice that certain programs did really well last year, but let's face it, this is still a conference where it's Ohio State, it's Michigan, it's Penn State. Mm-hmm. That you and I both know. And to the casual fan, those are the marquee names that mean something to them. There's a reason why 110,000 show up in Beaver Stadium. There's a reason why 114,000 to 115,000 people show up at Michigan.
Well,
and that's because there's separator programs.
It is. There's great history. There's great staffs. There's great kids. There's great fan base and support. And they understand the ebbs and flows. They're not patient with them. But they do understand some of the ebbs and flows, especially in today's, college football. And I do want to ask you one question because we talked to this about this a little bit before I hit the record button, and you alluded to it a little bit. I'd love to get your thoughts on when college football actually does make the transition to a 12-team playoff. I think we all can understand it's going to happen at some point. We don't necessarily know when. What does 12 teams mean for college football, and what will it mean for the Big Ten?
All right, so let's take that in a couple of parts. One is the NCAA basketball tournament has 68 teams in it. That means 19% of all Division I programs make the NCAA tournament, 19%. Right now, you have 4 teams in the college football playoff. That is 3% of all of FBS programs. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's a big difference. And the NCAA tournament, when they go out there, the entire country is represented. Mm-hmm. Right? Michigan's in the NCAA tournament. Gonzaga and Washington is in the NCAA tournament. UCLA in Southern California, Baylor in Texas. You know, you go all over to Florida State. Every part of the country is represented. All right, so now let's look at college football. Since 2017, the furthest west that any representation there has been in college football in the college football playoff is Norman, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You've had an entire half of the country that's been eliminated interest-wise in this. So I think it's going to do something for the interest. I think it's going to spread recruiting around, John. Right? Right now, you got players looking around saying, okay, you know, I'm a five-star guy. I want to be able to get to the playoff. Okay, so you end up going to Clemson and Alabama. Well, now if you've got 12 schools in there, hey, guess what? We're going to go to Michigan. We're not only going to make the playoff, we're going to win it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to go to Penn State. We're not going to get in the playoff. We're going to win it. All right, and I think this does a lot for the Big Ten because now it starts, I think, spreading the wealth across the board. And the Big Ten's going to have a possibility, in my opinion, of some years getting as many as three teams in. Usually getting two, probably getting as many as three in. This is why the SEC is pushing so hard, because the SEC thinks that deep down they can get three, maybe four out of this when it's all said and done. But I think it's going to spread the interest and spread the wealth in recruiting, and it's going to spread the interest in the game across the country. Because you and I know there's been a value to the regular season. You and I have talked about that before, mm-hmm. John. But now, think about November. All right, think about November. How many big games are there in November right now? Because the focus is only on seven teams in the country, maybe right. six. Right? Now the focus is going to be on as many as, I don't know, 23 teams. Suddenly that game in November, which you and I think on November 13th is going to be a big game anyway. Look, it's Penn State, Michigan. It's showing up is going to be a big game.
Yes.
But, you know, in terms of the national perception, what if that's the kind of game that, you know what? The winner of this game is in the thick of a 12-team playoff.
Well, okay. It's the teams that are in the thick of it. It's also the teams when you look at a Penn State schedule and you say, okay, well, Auburn, what does their resume look like? What does a win over Auburn right. look like for Penn State at that time? So it right. exponentially makes those important games even more right. that you want to take a look at.
Right, exactly. So instead of having somebody eliminated from the process on October the 10th, suddenly on October the 10th, even though it didn't go well on a particular day for somebody, they're still alive in the thing. As opposed to everybody go, well, all right, I guess that was a pretty good run. And that's the difference that this makes along the way. And again, you're going to go from four teams and say they do go with 12. I mentioned the 19% college basketball. I mentioned 3% college football. Going to 12 gets it to 9%. Mm-hmm. Right. So that means 91% won't make it. And I think that's something that people also have to take into account. And even if you're looking at Power 5, 65, which includes Notre Dame, you're going to have at least one team from the group of six in there. Okay.
Yep.
That's going to be an automatic. Maybe two. It would have been Cincinnati and Coastal Carolina this past year. Mm-hmm. But just say there's one. Okay, that means there are 11 other teams. That means only one out of six are going to make the college football playoff out of the Power Five. So it's, you know, when you start looking at the numbers, you're saying, how come we aren't doing this now?
Right.
plus, and then there's one other final part that cannot be discounted, John. Every athletic department in the country lost eight figures last year.
Oh, yeah.
Every one of them. Just like in pro sports, the NBA, if they want quick cash, can expand by two teams. Major League Baseball can expand by two teams. College sports can't do that. But where can you get quick cash? Okay, by expanding the playoff and taking the payout from $600 million, which is about where it is now, to over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. That's how you can get cash into coffers. So there's a lot of reasons to do this.
And I'll give you one more. Instead of, you know, having four teams where guys all opt in for the bowl game because they're playing in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to have 12 teams where all of the top players are going to continue to draw eyeballs from all fans around the country simply because, hey, they're in the college football playoffs and you're not going to sit out a college football playoff game to prepare for the NFL draft.
Well, exactly. Look at Florida in the Cotton Bowl last year. It's a great point by mm-hmm. you, John. Look at Florida in the Cotton Bowl last year. The wide receiving core all sat out. Like, really? Okay, fabulous. All right, you're telling me they're playing in the Cotton Bowl and college football playoff. Tony and those guys aren't playing? You better believe they're playing. Mm-hmm. So it does make a big, big difference. You are exactly right.
Well, Steve, I really appreciate you and your time and your insight. And we'll look forward to November 13 when Jim and Dan and I get a chance to come to State College and invade for the weekend.
I look forward to you invading for the weekend, my friend. I always enjoy seeing you. You know that. Invade all you want.
Looking forward to it. Steve Jones, the voice of the Nittany Lions on both the hardwood and the field. You can also catch him on the Steve Jones Show. And if you miss it, stevejonesshow.com. Steve, thanks again.
John, what a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Well, as always, I want to thank our guest, Steve Jones. Probably a longer conversation than he was planning on, but a great one nonetheless. We covered a lot of topics in regards to a preview of the Nittany Lions, the transfer portal, college football playoffs. A very knowledgeable guy, and I look forward to our chance to get together out in State College because we will be invading State College. It may take us a little while to get out of there, but hopefully we will be celebrating, and that will make that wait in the traffic all the better. If you missed any part of our preview so far to this point, make sure you go back on MGO Blue Podcast with John Jansen. You can find anything that you're looking for in regards to the previews. You can also go back and find anything Defend the Block that you're looking at, Conquering Heroes. This past week for Defend the Block, grad transfer Devontae Jones from Coastal Carolina and strength and conditioning coach John Sanderson joined Brian Bush. For more previews coming up, and we are working our way through this college football schedule that Michigan has, stay tuned, especially August 6th, we start to get into training camp. We're going to have players. We're going to have coaches. We're going to bring you everything that's going on inside Michigan football here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network. MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.